Go to the Revolution Hotline. Did we get every single sponsor in there? That was good. Christy Dosh standing by. ESPN business reporter. I've told you before. I will tell you again. At SportsBizMiss on the Twitter machine. ChristyDosh.com. Christy, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm awesome. Got a little rainy day here in Arkansas, but all is well.
Oh, we got some sun here. I'll try and send some your way.
Thank you. That would be good. We had a great day yesterday. So, okay. So the big news in recent weeks, actually, you were there for the announcement, the SEC ESPN Pact that everybody knew was coming. Everybody was looking forward to it, though. We actually carried the announcement live on the air. I know our listeners were thrilled about it. So what did you take away from the announcement, having heard all the folks talking about how this will impact both ESPN and the SEC?
Well, essentially, we're seeing the fourth different type of conference network. The Mountain West had a conference network that was really the first conference network back in 06. It only lasted till 2012. That they sort of blazed the trail. They made a lot of mistakes that the other conferences have been able to learn from. I mean, obviously, one of their big problems was just the stability of the membership, but they also had some issues with the way they set that network up. So then Big Ten Network came along, and that was owned, you know, partially by Fox, partially by the Big Ten, but ESPN had the first tier rights in the Big Ten, so ESPN was still getting to pick, you know, all the best games in the Big Ten, and then Big Ten Network was sort of left with the rest, and it took them a little while. You know, some people sort of forgotten how tough it was for Big Ten Network in the beginning. That first season that they were on the air, you know, people in Columbus, Ohio couldn't watch Ohio State unless they went to the game. Students on the campus of University of Minnesota couldn't see the game because their cable provider wasn't carrying it yet, so they had to go to the game to see it. And it took them a couple of years to overcome all those distribution issues. So then Pac-12 Network comes along, you know, decides to do a national network and six regional networks. They get several distribution deals in place a year before they start up. They decide the conference is going to own that network all on its very own. They've been around for a year now. We haven't heard any, you know, major hiccups other than they have had a lot of trouble getting the satellite providers on board. They did finally get Dish and are still working on DirecTV. So now the SEC has decided they're going to partner with their primary rights holder, ESPN. And Mike Slive said at the press conference, that's going to allow a lot of flexibility to move games around on different platforms, you know, between ESPN platforms and SEC Network. So there's every reason to believe that there's going to be some good games on SEC Network next season.
How did they?
Sorry, that's 2014. I'm still thinking of this season. It being 2013. So next season, 2014, is when we'll have the network.
How are they able to? Because it's something we struggle with in radio and other, you know, I know media outlets struggle with this to some degree. But in monetizing the internet content, I mean, because I know they're going to provide some on as an internet platform. ESPN3 has been very popular, but are they able to monetize that in any great way? Do you know?
The best way to monetize that is probably just through sponsorships and advertising. You know, I haven't heard any news of there being any sort of charge to consumers to watch that. You know, likely if your cable or satellite provider is signed on, you'll be able to get the digital content as well. Mm-hmm. But the sponsorship and advertising opportunities there are huge. More and more people are watching games from all the different sports online. You know, MLB Network has done a great job of broadcasting games online. And doing their MLB.TV package. So it's the sponsorship and advertising dollars that you can get from that. And that's part of why this deal took so long, because ESPN and the SEC went around and bought back all of the third-tier rights that schools had, which is essentially, you know, your worst football game every year, your bottom two basketball games or so, and then all those sponsorship rights so that they can all be under the same umbrella. That's going to make it a lot easier for ESPN to sell packages that sort of branch across ESPN networks, including SEC Network and those digital platforms.
Well, if there's one thing I know about the SEC and one thing I know about ESPN, it's that they don't wing it on these things. Now, they said they can't really, they haven't come up with actual figures yet as to what this will mean, you know, what kind of financial impact this will have. But surely they've got to have a pretty good feel for it or they wouldn't enter into this. I mean, they know it's going to be successful. You've got two great brands. But any idea, have you guys thrown around numbers? Have you started to dig into what this might mean financially?
The best I've been able to come up with is I talked to an SEC AD, and he told me, look, we have not gotten actual numbers. He said maybe the presidents had a better idea than the ADs did, but the ADs have not received firm numbers that they can count on at this point. There have just been sort of broad strokes. But, you know, the TV consultants that I have talked to who have worked with big networks in the past and worked on these kind of deals say that there's every reason to believe that this is going to be comparable to Big Ten Network, maybe not on day one, but sort of when you you look at the long-term future. And Big Ten Network just distributed $7.6 million per member school for this past school year. So there's every reason to believe that it's going to fall somewhere in that kind of $5 to $10 million range.
Okay. Christy Dosh joining us, ESPN business reporter. Again, online, ChristyDosh.com, at SportsBizMiss on Twitter. I don't know if these numbers are out there either, and Notre Dame is very guarded about what they put out, and they really don't release a lot of their financial information. But any clue what that NBC deal is worth to them? It's clearly worth a lot to them, or they would be considering getting into a conference and tying in directly with some of these conference packages.
I have not seen any reliable numbers, but I talked to some people back at the end of the football season, and Notre Dame having such a great year going into contract negotiations couldn't have been better for them. I mean, they were in the perfect position to negotiate, not to mention the NBC, that's their foothold in college football is Notre Dame, and they wouldn't have wanted the opportunity for Notre Dame to take those rights out on the open network and end up somewhere else. And kind of based on the deal that they did with the ACC and playing five games a year with ACC members, and it just the way that that all went down tells me they got what they wanted from NBC, that it wasn't a problem. You know, they're looking to make as much money as they could make if they were in a conference. So between what they're getting from their cut in the ACC for all the other sports and that NBC deal, I would expect that Notre Dame is taking home, you know, as much or more than any of the schools in some of those big power conferences, you know, like the Big Ten and the SEC.
There was a USA Today report that came out and looks at revenue about what schools bring in and what they spend in expenses. Alabama, number one in the SEC. Texas, number one overall nationally. Arkansas, I thought, did pretty well as far as what they clear. They made just under $100 million in revenue and $82 million in expenses. And I guess the one school that I gave a big pat on the back to is Texas A&M, one of the new members, almost $120 million in revenue, and they only spent $81 million as far as expenses from their athletic department. I don't know if you saw the report, but when you look at how schools are doing and then what they're spending back, I guess from the SEC standpoint, Alabama, number one in both departments.
Yeah, I think nobody's surprised about Alabama being near the top. I've had a couple of people ask me the last couple of days about Arkansas and how well they've been doing, and I don't know that this is a popular answer, but honestly, Bobby Petrino did a lot for Arkansas when it comes to finances. If you look back over the years that he was there and you sort of compare it to the 5 years or so before he was at Arkansas, donations went up, ticket sales went up, sponsorship money went up, they got a bigger apparel deal. You know, you can't tie everything directly to him, but it's more than coincidental, because I've already talked to folks at Western Kentucky, and they're already seeing a bump there because of the excitement that Petrino has brought there. So when I go around and I talk to students about finances and college athletics, I always put a picture of Bobby Petrino up on the screen, and I tell students he was averaging $3.25 million per year. And I ask, I say, how many of you think Bobby Petrino is overpaid? And inevitably, every student in the classroom, no matter what school I'm at, raises their hand. So then I go through all the numbers and I show them all of the revenue categories that increased while he was at Arkansas. And then I ask again at the end, how many of you think Bobby Petrino was overpaid? And I never get more than two or three people who raise their hand at the end. I mean, he made a big difference in that athletic department. And hopefully that can continue, that, you know, they've capitalized on it already and they can keep that momentum going now that he's gone.
Yeah, all coaches are overpaid, but it's all relative, I guess, at this point. So one of the things that jumped out at me, Christy, was Missouri. And the thought of a school being $16 million upside down in its athletic department when you look at revenue versus expenses is hard for me to even fathom. It's not only that they're not making a ton of money. I mean, they're making, you know, way less than some of the schools at the top of the SEC. It's that they spent $16 million more, or it cost them $16 million more to run the department than what they were able to bring in. And they're the only school in the SEC that's upside down.
I think they had some unique things happen last year, and I haven't had the chance to talk to them and let them explain all of those things, but I think they had some unique situations between them and the university and also not getting a full Big 12 distribution there at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, Texas A&M was lucky enough that they were able to sort of, you know, be right side up despite the fact that they would have had money withheld from the Big 12, but I think Missouri just had some unique things going on. We have not seen that from them on a yearly basis. That, you know, when I look at these numbers every year, Missouri does not stand out every year, which is what tells me something different was going on this year. It was kind of a one-year thing. I would not expect to see them upside down like that in the future. They have not been in the past, not to that degree.
How many schools work at a deficit? I'm talking about major conference schools, BCS conference schools. How many work at a deficit in their athletic department? Do you know what percentage that is?
Well, you know, technically, according to the report, only 22 or 23 schools actually were working in the black last year. That's incredibly deceiving. The way that these reports are put together and the way that it's reported, I think fans don't fully understand. They see that headline and it sounds like everybody's operating at a deficit. It's just not true. Athletic departments and universities have a lot of transactions between each other that aren't what we call arm's length transactions, so it's not what would happen between two unrelated entities. So, for example, a lot of universities take 50% of all licensing revenue that comes in through the athletic department. So you're cutting a revenue category in the athletic department in half. Okay. Also, a lot of universities take a percentage off the top of every donation, and that percentage can range from 5 to 12%. And again, that money is not hitting the athletic department's bottom line, despite the fact that they raised the money. So you can't really look at just athletic department financial statements. You've really got to have the university financial statements as well, and look at those transactions between the two entities. That tells the full story.
Shifting gears now, talking NFL, at least, or maybe we'll be talking CFL soon, but Tim Tebow, you recently did a story on him. I guess it was a while back now, but he was number one at the top of the, I think it was the Forbes list as far as Q-score goes. And, I mean, look, he's a guy that gets more hype than he should. We all know that. It's no news. But the fact that he was at the top of that list was pretty amazing to me. So where does he go from here? And do you think he's still a marketable entity if he whether he goes to the CFL or if he ends up not being a quarterback? Or what do you think happens with him?
You know, his marketing stock has fallen a lot in the last 12 months, you know, based on the sort of Jets experiment. That did not bode well for him in the marketing category. However, he is extremely well-known in the United States outside of sports fans, and there aren't that many athletes who translate really well outside of sports. There are just a few, you know, Tiger Woods, both Peyton and Eli Manning. All those guys are sort of up there with Tim Tebow in terms of non-sports fans being familiar with them. So one of the marketing people that I spoke with, I talked to him about, let's say Tim Tebow decides if he can't be a starting quarterback in the NFL, he just doesn't want to play football at all, and he wants to focus on his charitable work. I asked, does he still have value for that? Because most athletes, after their playing days, don't hold a lot of value when it comes to charitable work. They fall off the map pretty quickly because people just aren't familiar with them anymore. Tim Tebow is an exception to that. Every person that I talked to said he could have a really successful career and really do a lot with his charitable causes, even if he quit playing football right now, because so many people are familiar with him and he has such a good reputation off the football field. His football, you know, what's happening on the field is actually hurting his reputation, so he could actually rehabilitate it better at this point, maybe, if he wasn't playing.
Any clue, you know, how it would impact it if he did go to the Canadian Football League? Because I'm guessing if he's going to play quarterback, he's going to have to do that.
Yeah, I asked, you know, was it better for him to go to the CFL and be, you know, a backup probably, or should he go Arena League and kind of do the circus act thing? And basically, the marketers I talked to said it doesn't matter, that if he's not starting in the NFL, his marketing stock is down, that it really doesn't matter which of those other things he does. He should pick whichever one he thinks will get him back to the NFL as a starter the fastest.
Christy, the book Saturday Millionaire is coming out. Do you have a date yet?
I do, September 10th, and actually it'll start shipping August 27th, and I think pre-order is going to be available probably sometime next week, so if folks follow me on Twitter, I will definitely tweet out the links.
Okay, it's all on the business and financial aspects of college football, and you know, with all the developments recently with the ESPN and the SEC, are you writing, I mean, I know it's sort of it's a constant, it's sort of a living creature, I guess, of sorts, but I mean, I guess there probably is a cutoff point where you can't do anything else with it, and you have to leave it be.
This weekend is actually my cutoff. I just had a discussion with the publisher, and they said Sunday, you know, end of day, that's it. So I spent all of last weekend getting the new SEC network, you know, sort of as much as we know about it up there, getting what we know up about whether the ACC is going to have a network. And I am going through my conference realignment, just making sure that I caught every little move and covered all those. So that is my project this weekend. And unfortunately, I live at the beach. It's going to be high 80s this weekend, and I am going to be sitting inside with my laptop.
Sorry about that. Well, it'll be all handed off, I guess, after this weekend, so then you can enjoy
it. Oh, can't wait. And I just hope everybody stays put after this weekend because there will be no more edits.
Yeah, that would be, I guess that's true. Well, you have to do an update in a few years because you know there's going to be changes down the road.
Exactly.
Well, Christy, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Again, you can find out more with what Christy's up to at ChristyDosh.com or at SportsBizMiss on Twitter. Very active on Twitter. So, Christy, appreciate your time so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Christy Dosh, ESPN business reporter. Going to take a time out, talk a little baseball. Coming up in just a few minutes. Let me get Stephen Russell to hear in before we take a